This is the State of Things from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. A couple of weeks ago, we posted on Facebook asking for your favorite movie quotes, and we were inundated with your submissions. We're going to need a bigger show because there was no way that we could fit them all in. Here are some that did not make it.
Red, if you go, where shall I go? What shall I do?
Frankly, my dear, I don't give a
damn sight. I'm gonna get medieval on your ass.
Why so serious?
Surely you can't be serious.
I am serious. And don't call me Shirley.
Don't call me Junior.
Don't ever call me Doll.
Just shut up. You had me at...
Hello! My name is Inigo Montoya. You killed my father. Prepare to die!
No!
Offer me money.
I'm sorry, Dave. I'm afraid I can't do that.
It's alive.
This is Houston. Say again, please.
Houston, we have
what she's having
with some fava beans and a nice Chianti.
There is no spoon.
Is butter a carb?
Yes.
Get in my belly! Come on!
There we go. It's notable quotables today on Movies on the Radio. How often do you break out your favorite movie catchphrase? Every family or friend group has got one or two that nobody gets. And on this edition of Movies on the Radio, Marcia Gordon and Laura Boies cover some of your submissions and, of course, share a few of their own. Marcia is a film professor at NC State. Laura is film curator at the North Carolina Museum of Art and the curator of the Movie Diva series. Marcia and Laura, welcome back.
Thank you.
Here's looking at you. So let's
nice.
Talk about this. Let's talk about the various ways in which these kind of quotes make their way to the movies, because it seems to me a lot of them are just sort of common phrases, but others are very particular to the film.
Yeah, well, one of the things I've been thinking about is the difference between a beautifully crafted line, right? There's all these screenwriters out there crafting dialogue, or sometimes, of course, scripts are based on plays or works of literature, and it's just a beautiful sentence, and it's memorable and impactful because of the nature of the language. But so often with films, it's about the performance, and therefore it's about the actor or the actress and how he or she delivers these particular lines. And sometimes you can't separate the word from imagining the actor or the line saying it, right? And so when you think about that line, you are thinking about the delivery and you're thinking about the context more so than just the nature of the words on the page, because the words themselves are not all that memorable. It's about the delivery.
In real life, one so rarely has the right thing to say at the right time. That's one of the things that's so appealing about the movies, is that nobody is ever lacking for the proper comment at the right time.
Well, and there's so much compression because the assumption is everybody's seen this movie, so they know the context. So a simple phrase that you've used all your life, "they're here," becomes really a powerful meaning when everybody's seen Poltergeist and says, "they're here," and it's the in-laws. You know what I'm saying? It's like the power of that because of the compression, right?
Right. Well, and if you think about some lines, like one that I thought about in advance of the show was Rosebud from Citizen Kane. Right. One word uttered in a very particular way. I will not embarrass myself by doing it. But the point is that it's just a word. In the film, it's almost a distraction from what the film is actually about, but it's the delivery of it, right, and the way, the image you conjure when you hear it, and it's a symbol, right? It's more than just a word. It's an arbitrary word in some ways. It's a symbol of one of the things that's interesting about the film.
Well, let's go back to that threshold moment, in the moment between talkies and silent films, when this phrase was uttered.
Wait a minute, you ain't heard nothing yet. Wait a minute, I tell you, you ain't heard nothing. You want to hear Tootsie? All right, hold on.
That's a clip from the 1927 musical drama, The Jazz Singer, Marcia Gordon and Laura Boies. So what is historic about that? It's not the first talkie, we know that, but what? Tell us about this.
So first off, Al Jolson was, you know, the biggest recording star of his day. He's the person who uttered that that line. And so The Jazz Singer, which is a creaky film in many ways, not a masterpiece to my mind in any way, shape, or form, but historically really important in terms of the way it used sound technology. We wouldn't be talking about about our favorite lines today if we weren't able to hear them. Of course, there were lines of dialogue before the coming of sound, but they would have appeared on screen on title cards, so you would have had to read them. And I don't think we got a single silent era quote for today's show. And the reason is that, of course, the spoken lines are the ones that are so powerful. So in The Jazz Singer, we have a series of, I think it's six musical numbers that are sung by Jolson. But what was really powerful, I think, for audiences of the day is that most of the rest of the film is actually silent with title cards. But then every now and then, Jolson actually speaks. And sometimes it seems very casual and conversational. And I think that's partly what really wowed audiences. And so that's a moment of great referentiality of, you know, you ain't heard nothing yet. It's in the context of the story, but he's really talking to the audience about what they're about to hear.
Well, movies had been trying to add sound almost since the very beginning, and for various technological reasons, it never really worked out. But even in The Jazz Singer, the movie industry thought that it would only be used for musical numbers, that people did not want to hear actors speak. I mean, Hollywood was convinced of that. And when Al Jolson ad-libbed a little bit between his songs, it made people realize that maybe this technology could be used for something other than just music.
And was this maybe the first successful music that actually synced the music to the film? I think there was maybe
Vitaphone had been making shorts before then with opera singers and classical musicians. So this was the first time it was really a feature-length fiction film.
And it was such a huge success. It really was a wake-up call to the industry that feature films could and should be using this technology and better get their acts together, or Warner Brothers would be making all the money.
We're talking about your favorite catchphrase today on Movies on the Radio. Catchphrases like this.
This is Jay Parker in Chapel Hill, North Carolina.
I'm walking here. I'm walking here. Up yours, you son of a bitch. Don't talk me that way. Get out of here.
That's a Rizzo crossing the street, screaming at a vehicle coming at him. Hands on the hood. Took me back completely to my high school days in Levittown, New York, crossing this four-lane road to my highway, to my high school, and five of the tough guys from my school, which were relatively numerous, is crossing against 45, 50 mile an hour traffic with no consideration whatsoever to the cars coming down the street. Guy screeches to a halt in front of one of them, and he pounds on the hood, points and screams, and just goes walking on with his trench coat billowing in the wind. When I saw Midnight Cowboy, it all came rushing back.
1969 film, Midnight Cowboy.
Well, in fact, people, including me, will use that line even outside of the context of the rest of the movie, because you are always in danger of being run over by cars when you're crossing any street. So.
Yeah, but it's giving my space. You use it all the time. You can use it at meetings. I'm walking here, right? Let's do that. I mean, I do. I do when I get overrun by the staff. They keep talking and say, hey, give me a chance.
But this is also a film from which you quote with regularity.
So you remember, I've said this before, but I was an usher. It was my first real job, and usher at the Lowe's Buffalo Theater at the time in Buffalo, New York. And it was my first job. And this film was huge. It was the only film that actually lasted for more than a week at that particular theater, but it was up for weeks and weeks and weeks. So I know every single line. I know, and I fell in love with the movie, actually. My favorite line is, again, one that you can't really use. Like, I'm walking here, you can use all the time. My favorite is when Joe Buck and Ratso are having an argument, and they're going back and forth, and Ratso finally says, and another thing, frankly, you're beginning to smell. And for a stud in New York, that's a handicap. You can't use that anywhere, but what a great line.
You could try.
Let's move on.
My name is David Fellerap, and I live in Durham. And my line is from a famous Western called The Searchers. So, The Searchers is one of the great movies ever made about American history in the 19th century, moving west. It's a very dark film that shows the violence and racism on which westward expansion was predicated. And it's set in a very specific moment, 1868, right after the Civil War. And it's also takes place during this incredible violence that was going on between white settlers and the Native Americans that they were displacing at that time. So my line comes early in the film, and John Wayne's character Ethan has just come home to Texas. His family hasn't seen him in many years since he left to fight in the Civil War. And it's pretty clear he's been doing some bad things since the war, and his family's kind of afraid of him. Then the cavalry shows up. They're looking for men to join a posse, and the captain wants Ethan to swear an oath.
All right, I'll swear you in.
No need to. Wouldn't be legal anyway.
Why not? You wanted for a crime, Ethan?
Coffee, Ethan.
Thank you, Martha. You asking me as a captain or a preacher, Sam?
I'm asking you as a ranger of the sovereign state of Texas.
You got a warrant?
You fit a lot of descriptions.
Figure a man's only good for one oath at a time. I took mine to the Confederate States of America. So did you, Sam.
At first, it seemed like a statement of moral clarity, something Gary Cooper would say, but it becomes immediately clear that he's an obsessed and violent racist, and he's clinging to a lost cause and a discredited ideology.
Talking about the 1956 Western The Searchers.
Yeah, so that just hearing John Wayne's voice is a reminder to me of how I kind of framed my little bit at the beginning of the show, which is John Wayne's voice is so distinct. I mean, we would know it any time we hear it. And so when he delivers a line, I mean, the one I always think of from The Searchers is more of a comic line, "That'll be the day." But that kind of powerful, resonant voice that is a kind of signature you know, for so many of the films that he made.
Movies on the Radio today. We're going to talk about your favorite catchphrases from the movies with Marcia Gordon and Laurel Boys, and we'll have more on the state of things from North Carolina Public Radio, a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina, Chapel Hill. Please stay with us. This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Movies on the Radio today, talking about your favorite movie quotes. Film experts Marcia Gordon and Laura Boys are here. Marcia's a film professor at NC State. Laura is the film curator for the North Carolina Museum of Art and the curator of the Movie Divas series. She will be screening That Night in Rio, starring Carmen Miranda. That's at the Carolina Theater tonight at 7. Also showing The Killers at the North Carolina Museum of Art in Raleigh on Sunday at 2. But let's talk about a Whoopi Goldberg film right now.
I'm Crystal O'Neill from Graham. My quote is,
"You can't miss me. I'm a little black woman in a big silver box with a top of success phone."
And that's from Jumpin' Jack Flash. Whoopi Goldberg said it during a scene in the movie where I guess the spies have come to get her, and they have latched onto the phone booth that she's using. And I think it struck me so much because it's ridiculous. She's being dragged down the street by a tow truck, and of course it's a landline, so she couldn't possibly still be talking on the phone. But she's telling the police that they should be able to find her because she's a little black woman in a big silver box. And I just loved that movie and loved Whoopi at that time because she seemed fun. I loved her style. She was hysterical. And she made me laugh. And I would say that when I got frustrated. And, of course, my friends would look at me like, "What are you talking about?"
Jumpin' Jack Flash, 1986 Whoopi Goldberg comedy, Marcia Gordon and Laura Boys.
That's so funny. I just watched this film recently, and it did not occur to me that she could no longer be talking on the phone since everybody talks on the phone everywhere
That's
now.
Right.
But Whoopi is someone else who has just such a distinctive way of delivering any line that it's really a pleasure listening to her dialogue.
Well, and when I was reflecting on the number of responses I had on my social media, so many of them were comic lines. Those are the ones we can probably use most often, right? Because obviously everyone likes making other people laugh. And when you have a comic moment in a film that you can deploy, and it makes me think of my favorite final line of any film, which is from Some Like It Hot, "Nobody's Perfect," which is a great line to be able to trot out. And it's delivered in such a perfect way. It's an amazingly kind of concise way to end a really complicated film. And so those are really fun to have at the ready.
But it also raises the question, once the film is out there, right, and it's out there for all of us to view, what happens, you know, in terms of what we might call appropriation. Mm-hmm. I mean, the listener talked about it. She said, you know, when I say I'm a little black woman in a silver box, my friends all look at me, but it's this, it's become a kind of Pan-American cultural icon. It also thinks, you know, you have to think about vernacular when stars speak in a vernacular and then everybody takes it on, you know, it's like, well, how is that meant, you know, and is it all ours?
Yeah. And I mean, this is no different to me than the way we use lines from Shakespeare, which people use them all the time, sometimes whether they know it or not, right? Because they've become so much a part of our kind of language and our culture. And they can be taken wonderfully out of context and still have that kind of concise, if you pick the right line, great meaning, great ideas.
Well, here, a great example of that at the end of The Maltese Falcon, Humphrey Bogart says, this is the stuff that dreams are made of,
right,
which is a Shakespeare line which Humphrey Bogart contributed to the script himself because he knew his Shakespeare.
Good stuff. Laura, let's talk about Casablanca while we're there. Why don't we play one of your picks right now?
Everybody is to leave here immediately. This cafe is closed until further notice. Clear the room at once.
How can you close me up? On what ground?
I'm shocked to find that gambling is going on in here.
You're winning, sir.
Oh, thank you very much. Everybody out at once.
Oh, there we go. Laura was talking about The Maltese Falcon. When they then play Casablanca from 1942? You like that line.
Well, this film has so many great lines that you can choose. You know, like, this is the beginning of a beautiful friendship, or the misquoted, you know, play it again, Sam, which is really, you know, you played it for her, you can play it for me. But the reason I love this one is because I use it all the time. You know, I'm shocked to discover that the North Carolina election maps have been gerrymandered. I mean, you can use it so many places, and, you know, the news just really encourages
it is interesting because you use that all the time, and I finally realized where it came from. I mean, I know a lot of the other pull quotes from that movie, but it's interesting that that one didn't occur to me. And she does use it all the time. Right?
It's true.
Like, yeah.
Now we know.
Well, it's a great line, and again, I'm shocked is a very common line, but in that, particularly the irony of handing him his winnings
his
at this
winnings,
moment,
yes,
right?
At the same
but
time.
It's the delivery. When you say the line, right, you're
right.
saying
I'm shocked. It doesn't have the same thing, so.
Let's take one of your picks, Marcia. Let's listen to this. It's a quick one. Listen fast. Do you want to set it up first?
I think I should probably set it up.
You should.
So I wrote a book on Sam Fuller a couple of years ago, and so I always come back to Fuller, who's one of my favorite filmmakers. And this is from a film he did in 1953 called Pick Up on South Street. And Fuller actually wrote this line of dialogue. He worked on a script that was already in existence in order to kind of make it his. And it's delivered by Richard Widmark, who's one of my favorite actors of this period, a little bit under the radar actor, but he's being interrogated by the FBI because he has accidentally he's a pickpocket, that's what he does for a living, and he has accidentally taken a piece of microfilm that was in a woman's wallet who was conveying it to a communist agent. So all of a sudden, he's in hot water with the FBI. And the thing about this character is that he is out for himself. He wants to make money on the streets. That's what he does. He's not very interested in patriotic pleas. And Fuller had to fight to keep this line in the film because he was being accused of creating a character who came off as kind of sympathetic to communism at a time. There was very little tolerance for that. And Fuller was galled by the suggestion, just because one of my characters is this way doesn't mean I'm this way. And so this is Skip's wonderful line that's delivered when they are trying to make a patriotic argument about why he should hand over this microphone that he can make more money from if he does not hand it over.
Are you waving a flag at me?
That was a lot of buildup, ladies and gentlemen, for that little line. But I love that line. It says it all. Like, this is not, I'm not interested in your arguments. I'm a pickpocket. This is what I do. I'm out to make money. And don't bother with the patriotic pleas. And I love that Fuller fought so hard to leave that line in the film.
And you know what I hear when you play it completely out of context like that? I hear, are you looking at me?
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
From Taxi
Travis
Driver.
Bickle.
Yeah.
Travis Bickle.
Well, and it's an all-American line. Like, I'm out for myself. That's, you know, I've got that right. It's right in the Constitution. Why? It's a beautiful line. And the fact that he fought for it, I think, is great and heroic. Glad you pointed that out. Worth the buildup. Here's another fine film.
My name is Kimberly Pfeiffer, and I live in Raleigh, North Carolina.
Raising Arizona is probably in my top five favorite movies of all time. I saw it for the first time as a teenager, probably about 16, and I just thought it was the most weird and wonderful thing I had ever seen, and it has remained a favorite ever since. There are several quotes. Well, the whole movie is ridiculously quotable, but one of my favorites is when High goes to pick up his paycheck, and the woman handing over the paycheck says,
"Government do take a bite, don't you?"
The delivery of it, the sort of bleakness of that particular scene of his whole life in the factory. And the quote that I use the most often is, "I love him so much." I'll use it in relation to a celebrity or a public figure. So it's a handy shortcut to sort of say how much I admire somebody.
I love him so much.
I know you do, honey.
I love him so much.
I know you do.
Clip from the Coen Brothers, 1987 comedy Raising Arizona.
Of course, this is a baby that she's kidnapped.
So yeah. That's a perfect example. I love you so much. I love him so much. That is the most generic line in the entire, it could be in any movie in the world, but it's all about the delivery and the context and that sobbing Holly Hunter. And I mean, the Coen Brothers, talk about well-written. I mean, yeah. Raising Arizona, there are so many great quotes from that film and from every Coen Brothers film.
Right.
And that's the case. They are just artists of language.
Well, but Kimberly makes a point there, and a couple of people have made the point as well, and we did. It's a movie that, frankly, you could just cut up the script and put the lines
right.
up. Is there something about you get to a critical mass, like if there's enough great lines, people remember one or two lines from your movie, and if you don't have enough, the one great line gets lost? I don't know.
I don't know.
Hey, let's go to the phones. We've got a caller who wants to talk about a film and some memorable lines. TJ from Raleigh is on the line. Hi, TJ.
Hey, how are you guys?
Good.
Great.
We're good.
Awesome. I just wanted to make sure we included this one. I thought that Jerry Maguire had quite a few memorable lines. I think everyone kind of goes to the "you had me at hello" or "you complete me," but I definitely have used many times "show me the money."
Yeah,
it's a classic, especially how they delivered it. I think that whole scene was just a lesson in how to really push with negotiation skills. I think about it, and I've used it sort of comically, talking with colleagues, particularly my female colleagues, trying to negotiate their, their contracts and demanding what they're worth. And that whole scene back and forth with Tom Cruise sort of bulging vessels in his forehead and turning red in the face and repeating after Cuba Gooding Jr. to show him the money was it's just very memorable.
Great stuff. Thanks, TJ.
And that was a line that when that movie came out, it was everywhere.
Yeah.
I mean,
yeah.
Everybody was quoting that line. It was used in every kind of mashup imaginable, and that it just took off like wildfire. And who would have? I cannot imagine that when they wrote that line, anyone imagined that would have happened to it.
But that was Cuba Gooding Jr. too. You know, with the emphasis on it that really brought you along.
Yeah, and it's also, you know, ways in which they get used ironically. Like, then I know you saw the film about all this greed, I'm going to flip it on you and say, show me the money, right?
Show me the money.
A thousand different ways. Lots of films and great quotes. Let's get to the next.
Hey, my name is Pete Wood. I live in Raleigh, North Carolina. And one of my favorite movies is John Carpenter's They Live. It stars Roddy Piper, a professional wrestler, making his film debut. And if you've ever seen professional wrestlers, you know they're pretty good with one-liners. And his one-liner in this movie is improvised. It is not in the script. It's a great sci-fi action movie that is even more relevant today than it was back in the 80s when it came out. It's about marketing, manipulation of the masses, the haves and the have-not. Piper plays a homeless drifter who discovers how the aliens are manipulating most of humanity, and they control the money. And he goes into a bank that is staffed mainly by aliens, and he utters one of my favorite lines of all time.
"I have come here to chew bubblegum and kick ass. And I'm all out of bubblegum."
It just sums up his frustration and his plan perfectly. Maybe it's how we all feel.
from the 1988 sci-fi action thriller They Live.
So many of the action, sci-fi, horror films, I think particularly in the 80s and 90s, I mean, you could just do a whole show rattling those off. And you think about people like Arnold Schwarzenegger at the time delivering these lines. I think,
Yippee-yi-yo-ki-yay.
Yeah, right, Bruce Willis. they just generated. Yeah. That was part of the play of going to them. And I think after a while, scriptwriters must have known, I need to write the line that's going to be the quotable line
from
the show. Well,
surely that came out of the whole James Bond thing where he always had... where he always had, a quip at the right moment.
Yeah. Yeah, and I mean, they had to be paced. I'm guessing that you're looking on the page and you bold them so that you can actually see on the page the pulse of the script. It's like, we need a one-liner right there.
Yeah.
We've got more. In fact, if you're talking about great lines, Say Anything would be about the best film to talk about, wouldn't it?
Hi, my name is Dabney Grinnan, and I live in Chapel Hill. The movie that I probably quote the most from, just because it's like one of my favorite movies of all time, and I think Cameron Crowe is just such a brilliant screenwriter, is Say Anything. So I there's a whole series of things from Say Anything that I routinely work into my conversations with people. One of them is one of my favorite scenes. My sister and I are madly in love with this scene where Diane Court has just broken up with Lloyd Dobler by giving him a pen, and he's wandering around town talking into his little cassette tape recorder, devastated. And he comes across all of his guy friends, and they're all like telling him, how to get past her. All these guys around and say to him, here's what you need to do, here's what you're doing. And then Lloyd Dobler says to them,
I got a question. You guys know so much about women. How come you're here at like a gas and sip on a Saturday night, completely alone, drinking beers, no women anywhere?
By choice, man. That's right, man. It's a conscious choice.
It's a choice, man.
And then I think the other one, me and my friends always laugh about, the idea that when your kid can't figure out what they want to do when they grow up, when they can't figure it out, they say things like,
I don't want to sell anything, buy anything, or process anything as a career. I don't want to sell anything bought or processed, or buy anything sold or processed, or process anything sold, bought, or processed, or repair anything sold, bought, or processed. As a career, I don't want to do that. So my father's in the Army. He wants me to join, but I can't work for that corporation. So what I've been doing lately is kickboxing.
That'll do it.
that takes me back to the other great line about that, which is plastics.
Plastics, right.
From The Graduate. Yeah.
Yeah. And once again, the delivery, John Cusack's delivery, is just really wonderful.
But that, you think about plastics. I mean, plastics was the line that you could, it was a line. And of course, it was delivered with that, sort of that great enthusiasm. And Dustin Hoffman is looking at him like, what on earth? This one is, unfortunately, you could never quote it because it's so beautifully delivered where he's tumbling over.
Right.
The words are tumbling. He's trying to get it all straight about processing and he doesn't really know what he means. It's too bad because it's a great line. And I can imagine people trying.
I have no doubt that
somebody's got it.
I have no doubt that some people have memorized that because it's a very witty line.
But so much of it's the delivery. It's like trying to figure out, am I saying process the processing or the tool?
Because John Cusack, it seems like he's thinking it over while he's saying it.
Yeah, yeah. Or trying to remember what it was somebody
Well, what he meant.
Exactly what it is. Well, here's a little clearer, I think. Clearer lines of delivery and certainly memorable.
Hi, my name is Jane. I'm from Raleigh, North Carolina, and I love quotes from The Lion King. I really love this movie because it works on many different levels. As a kid, you can enjoy it for its color and animation and how musical it is, and then when you get older, you really start to absorb more of the dialogue and what they're saying, and it's such a beautiful coming-of-age story, and I love the quote that Rafiki says, Simba, when he is going through a very conflicted time in his life, he's wondering if he should go back to Pride Rock or not and actually fulfill his duties.
I know what I have to do, but going back means I'll have to face my past. I've been running from it for so long. Ow! Jeez, what was that for?
It doesn't matter. It's in the past.
Yeah, but it still hurts.
Oh, yes, the past can hurt. But the way I see it, you can either run from it or Learn from it. Ah, you see? So what are you going to do?
First, I'm going to take your stick.
No, not your stick. Hey, where are you going?
I'm going back.
Good. Go on, get out of here.
And I think that's such a clever way for not only kids to understand, but for adults to understand too, that, you know, facing your fears and coming to terms with it, those will always stick by you.
There we go, 1994 animated musical, The Lion King.
The Lion King is the most financially successful entertainment of all time, in between the Disney movie, the play, the soundtrack, everything. So it clearly speaks to a lot of people.
It's funny how every single one of these clips is triggering another one for me. For that one, it was Wax On, Wax Off.
Mm-hmm. Oh, yeah.
Karate Kid.
Yeah.
Well, you know, the only thing is I would have, it's a small quibble, and you're right, it's the most financially successful franchise ever, but I would have directed that line a little differently, because what he says is, you can either run from it or learn from it. I don't know. You can either run from it or learn from it. It just annoys me every time I hear it.
So
you should have gone back over that and gotten it right. The emphasis was on the wrong
one. This is a great pursuit for you to redirect The Lion King.
Well, I know it's successful, but they always could have picked up a few more bucks.
Could have been a little better.
Could have been a little better, and that would have done it. That would have probably...
It's a Hollywood attitude for you.
Movies on the Radio today with film critic and director Frank Stachow, along with Laura Boysen and Marcia Gordon. Laura, film curator at the North Carolina Museum of Art and curator of the Movie Diva series. Marcia is a film professor and a processor. Do you process films at North Carolina State? More to come. Stay tuned. This is The State of Things. I'm Frank Stachow. Movies on the Radio today. Film experts Marcia Gordon and Laura Boys talking about your favorite one-liners from the movies.
So my name is Elizabeth Hips, and I am from Raleigh, North Carolina. We watched Babe on VHS over and over and over again. And so for us, the phrase, that'll do, pig, also became kind of, it's time for that movie to stop. You've done enough, which is not what was coming from that movie, but became kind of our internal joke.
And so it was that in all the celebration, in all the hubbub of noise and excitement, there were two figures who stood silent and still, side by side. And though every single human in the stands or in the commentary boxes was at a complete loss for words, the man who in his life had uttered fewer words than any of them knew exactly what to say.
That'll do, pig. That'll do.
That's where it resonated with me. I could understand the farmer and how he was so dry about his praise, which resonated with me because I had a mom who was always looking for the 3 extra points on the quiz. If I got a 97, why did I not get the first, 100?
Talking about the 1995 classic Babe. That's kind of sad. And she watches it over and over. I feel like.
Well, and I think it's interesting listening to that clip with all the violins, and it's this super emotional moment. I like the way that it became this inside thing within her family, that it became kind of repurposed in a very different way.
Well, we all want our parents to say that'll do. I don't think that's a unique experience.
We might want to say, great, that's fabulous, don't you? Wow, a 97, I'd say.
It depends on the parents.
I guess it does. Well, we'd have gone to jail if we hadn't included this one.
Hi, my name is Charlie Shelton Orman, and I live in Durham. And my favorite movie quote comes from the 1998 film The Big Lebowski. It's a movie about a guy named The Dude and his buddies who all really love to bowl together. And there are a lot of great quotes that come from their time in the bowling alley. But my favorite quote comes from a moment when their arch nemesis named Jesus approaches them about an upcoming match. And Jesus is, you know, talking trash to the dude and his team. And he says,
"You're ready to be f***ed, man. I see you roll your way into the semis. Dios mio, man. Liam and me, we're gonna f*** you up."
"Yeah, well, you know, that's just like your opinion, man."
And to me, I think it's just a great line to carry with you when someone's trying to get in your face and get you really up in arms about something. You just toss out that line. You just act unfazed by it. And then they just walk along the way. Just keep on doing whatever you're doing. And in the case of the dude, just keep on bowling. So I think the dude is very inspirational and his easygoing personality. And that line really encapsulates that person.
I wish I had known this when Charlie was working here. Our own Charlie Shelton-Orman, who was an erstwhile producer of The State of Things. And now I know where all that came from.
The great
all of
diffuser.
His wisdom came from The Great Lebowski.
Well, this is such a ridiculously quotable movie. And it's funny, you know, when it first came out, it was not particularly well reviewed, and it has gained so much love over the decades. And a lot of it has to do with, how quotable the Coen brothers always are.
Such funny writing.
So funny. And such unusual characters saying things that you would never expect them to say.
Well, you can imagine how Shut Up, Donnie.
Yeah.
Or there was more, I think. I didn't have the whole line here. It's just like you would say that to anybody if you were, inclined to use that kind of language because it was so powerful out of the mouth. I mean, and again, it's common, very common language. Well, we're sticking with the Coen brothers and one of your favorite lines, Marcia, and you should probably set this one up too.
This is mine.
Yours. Yes, no, this is Laura's.
It's Laura's, yes. So this is another incredibly quotable movie. And the thing that I love about this is, so we're talking about someone who's a kind of terrible husband and father, and his ex-wife has found a new partner. And her main criteria is that he's bona fide.
"Mama says that he's bona fide."
"You give her a ring?"
"Yes, sir. Big and got it. Mama checked it. It's bona fide. He's a suitor."
"What's his name?"
"Vernon T. Waldrop. Uncle Vernon. Till tomorrow, then he's gonna be daddy."
"I am the only daddy you got. I am the damn paterfamilias."
"But you ain't.
There we go.
So this is another thing that you can use in so many situations. Unlike my other favorite line from this movie, in which they believe that someone has been turned into a frog because it's sort of a magical realism thing, and toad, I should say. And there's this, "I thought you was a toad."
Do you use bona fide all the time? Somebody that is not bona fide.
Yeah,
is that something you use all the time?
It is. I say it's bona fide.
And then it's the question of whether or not you have to affect the accent or the vernacular, right, to really bring it home.
Well, one of the ones that I like to trot out is, "I've always relied on the kindness of strangers." That's my one line, which of course is Tennessee Williams filtered through the movies.
So you need to be your sort of faded Southern belle.
Exactly. You have to. You can't just say, "I've always relied on the kindness of strangers." Right. That's kind of boring.
Yeah.
That's kind of annoying, too.
It is.
I'm highly dependent on the goodwill and charity of those who I don't know. That's when you get it wrong and people are looking at you like, "What are you doing?" Hey, let's go to the phones. Jay is on the line from Apex and has one for us as well. Jay, how are you doing?
Doing very well.
Good. Give us your quote.
So my favorite quote comes from Tommy Boy. It's actually not even my favorite quote. It's my father's favorite quote. Comes from the movie Tommy Boy. And this character's father says the line, "Well, you can either, if you want a good steak, you can either stick your head up a bull's rear end," that's not the word he uses, "but, or you can ask a butcher." And the thing I love about this particular line is that then the character Tommy, as he bumbles his way through life, goes on to butcher that line over and over again as he's trying to sell the product until eventually it climaxes where he can finally get the line right and at the kind of culmination of the movie.
So it's its own misquote.
So
it's its own misquote that's kind of built into the film, and you don't know whether we're supposed to go with the right quote or bumble it. It's a great example. Well, thanks for calling, Jay. Yeah, there you go. And again, the kind of the programmed misquote and how we take what we thought was, I mean, Play It Again, Sam, is probably the most famous or infamous of the misquotes, but we do it all the time, right?
All the time.
And also the way these things get passed down through families, you know, the movies that your parents love and quote to you, then it becomes part of your language, whether or not you know the origin of it or not.
And in some ways, it doesn't matter if it's, you know, misquoted, if everyone gets what the reference is, and it's a kind of re-signification. It's not some kind of pure sanctified thing, right? This is a line that you are reappropriating in your own way.
Well, and the family thing is kind of interesting because I put in our billboard little section at the very top of the show lines that you can't, that you remember but you can't possibly quote again, which, and I used the line from The Silence of the Lambs, you know, I ate his liver with fava beans and a good Chianti. And one of my producers says, oh, my father uses that all the time.
That's right.
So,
that's right.
And it becomes a thing. That becomes a context in your family as well. Let's move on. There are plenty more films and lots more listeners. Let's listen to this one.
Hey, guys. My name's Aditi Bandlamudi, and I'm WUNC's gun reporter. And I'm going to share a quote from the seminal movie Shrek, which I think is super significant to the history of film. Shrek goes,
"For your information, there's a lot more to ogres than people think."
Example?
Example? Okay, ogres are like onions.
They stink?
Yes. No.
Oh, they make you cry?
No.
Oh, you leave them out in the sun, they get all brown, start sprouting little white hairs?
No. Layers. Onions have layers. Ogres have layers. Onions have layers? You get it. We both have layers.
Oh, you both have layers. Oh. You know, not everybody likes onions.
Cake!
Everybody loves cakes. Cakes have layers.
I don't care what everyone likes. Ogres are not like cakes.
You know what else everybody like? Parfait. Have you ever met a person you say, hey, let's get some parfait? They say, hell no, I don't like no parfait. Parfaits are delicious.
No! You dense, irritating, miniature beast of burden. Ogres are like onions. End of story. Bye-bye.
I think the quote is really important to me because not for any reason other than sentiment. Like, I remember saying that. I still say it with my dad, like, all the time. I think I quote from that movie, but that specific quote, constantly, if I'm ever talking about layers.
There you go. That's Aditi. See, more nepotism here at the station.
So what I like about that really drove home for me, listening to her talk about that, how generational this is, right? Because that is not a movie I would recognize a quote from. I saw it one time. And, you know, for my generation, my time, I mean, I think about things like Princess Bride, which is somehow analogous to Shrek, or even Monty Python, you know, and those are the places where I know the lines. And so obviously people of a certain age are able to recognize each other's quotable lines because they saw the same films over and over again.
Well, kids watch things over and over and over again, and then it becomes a part of who you are.
Yeah, and again, the context. When we all, everybody in that room all laughed at that line together, that becomes our thing. Mm-hmm. That becomes our code line, and then we can keep going back to it. And it binds us in ways that other people, you know, might not pick up on. There's more.
My name is Ellie Pate, and I'm living in Chapel Hill, North Carolina. My favorite quote is from the movie Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind. And in this scene, it's the very beginning of the movie, and Joel Berry, the main character, is sitting in this diner watching Kate Winslet, the other main character, and he's scribbling to himself in his journal as he's watching her, and he says,
"Why do I fall in love with every woman I see who shows me the least bit of attention?"
Throughout the movie, this quote kind of takes on its own life as they learn what their prior relationship was and why they keep coming back together despite the fact that they don't really seem to be very compatible. And it begs the question of, why do we fall in love with the people we fall in love with? Are they picked out for us beforehand, or are they just kind of selected at random? And nobody really knows the answer to that in this movie. And I find that really significant to me because it's something I'm looking for all the time. It's like serendipity and special occurrences and things that kind of appear into our lives for a reason, but that's never really something that you can know the answer to.
From the movie The Eternal Sunshine of the Spotless Mind from 2004.
Well, movie love is something very, very personal. Lines speak to individuals in sometimes magical ways, which is why even if somebody loves a movie that I don't care for, I'll defend to the death your right to like that movie. Don't make me watch it necessarily, but, and I'm not saying Eternal Sunshine is one of those films.
No, but it does speak to how a line might not resonate with everyone, but it has a real personal meaning.
Exactly.
Yeah. Well, let's go to the phones now. Brian is on the line. We're getting toward the end of the show, but Brian's got a story for us. Hi, Brian.
Hi. Yeah, my favorite quote was in Bronco Billy. Clint Eastwood was talking to Sandra Locke, and he was, Clint Eastwood was with Bronco Billy, and he's explaining to her that he was married once, and Sandra Locke asked him, well, what happened? He says, well, she had an affair with my best friend, and so I shot her. And Sandra Locke says, you shot her? Why didn't you shoot him? And Bronco Billy says, well, he was my best friend.
He had to pause a beat and look at her quizzically, like, what are you talking about?
Clint Eastwood has his share of the great lines, does he not?
Great stuff, Brian. Yeah, that was a Bronco Billy. What year was that? That was, do we know Bronco Billy? That was it.
I do not.
Back then.
Yeah. Back
Brian,
then.
Thank you very much for your call. Well, I've got time for one more. This was one of my favorites because, you know, Midnight Cowboy saw it a billion times at the Lowe's. Well, the trailer that we would show endlessly after Midnight Cowboy was for a film that didn't do quite as well. It was the film Ned Kelly starring, yes, Mick Jagger. And he's about to be hanged. He's actually a folk hero in Australia, and it's the more or less true story, a film that was done about him. And he's hanged, right? And these are the true words that the actual outlaw, Ned Kelly, spoke. And then here is Mick Jagger's rendition.
Such is life.
Boom! And they hung him. They hung him. Now, as a 17-year-old boy, that was so perfect. Such is life. And I'd be quoting that all over the place.
And so when you trot that out, nobody knows what
that's Nobody had any idea because I was the only human being. And I only saw the trailer. I never did see the film. Nobody saw the film. $2.5 million to make. It grossed maybe 800,000. And I don't know, you know.
Now I know what you're getting for Christmas.
Such is life. Such is life.
No fighting in the war room, Frank.
Well, we didn't get to that one.
There's so many.
Laura Boys, Marcia Gordon, we have talked about your favorites. And next time on Movies on the Radio, man, we're going to need a bigger boat. As they say in the movies, it's Steven Spielberg. We're going to take a look at one director and the opus, as we say.
Because he's worked in so many genres, it really is a very varied filmography.
He has had such a long and such a commercially successful career. I think it's going to be very interesting just to tackle him for the whole show.
We're going to do that. We're going to spend some time with directors throughout our career here as we continue. Steven Spielberg is next, so send us an email at sot@wnc.org. You can also tweet at us at #SOTMovie, and we'll try to get you on the air. By the way, Laura is the film curator at the North Carolina Museum of Art and the curator of the Movie Diva series, and she's going to be screening That Night in Rio, starring Carmen Miranda, at the Carolina Theater tonight at 7. Also showing The Killers at the North Carolina Museum of Art in Raleigh on Sunday, September 22nd at 2 p.m. Of course, we have that at our website,
StateOfThings.com. New day, new time for NCMA movies. They're now going to be Sunday afternoons at 2.
And Marcia Gordon is a film processor.
Yes.
At North Carolina State.
Thank
you so much for being with us, and thank you for listening to the State of Things from North Carolina Public Radio. State of Things produced by Anita Rao, Laura Pelliser, Dana Terry, Amanda Magnus, Grant Hull of Mormon. Robin Copley is our technical director. Josie Taras is our intern. And North Carolina Public Radio is a broadcast service of the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. I'm Frank Stachow.